Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and today we look at seeds and how the different varieties are developed. And a couple of guests for you today. Julie Dawson, one of them, back with us once again. She's an associate professor at the UW-Madison in the Department of Horticulture, leads the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative in Wisconsin. Julie, welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
With her as well as is Nicola Angelbear. Nico is a plant breeder by training and is the CEO and co-founder of Seed Linked. And Nico, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me again.
As we talk with them, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. What vegetable seed questions do you have? Do you have a variety you want to tell us about or ask about? Join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Julie, let's start with you. Maybe we could start by just talking about what the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative is all about.
Sure. The Seed to Kitchen Collaborative started in 2014, and it was named by my first graduate student, Kit Healy. And the goal was to identify varieties that did really well for farmers in Wisconsin that were selling to local markets. And we focused on vegetables and really worked with farmers and chefs to identify varieties that had excellent flavor, excellent quality, and excellent production for small-scale farmers who were selling to farmers markets or CSAs or local restaurants.
Kind of like the idea of the triage there, that you have the three groups getting the chefs involved even in it.
Yeah, we were really lucky. We are really lucky to have a really active group of chefs that are supporting local farms in Wisconsin, as well as really innovative farmers that were interested in participating.
So the benefits for producers are what?
So hopefully they find varieties that are well adapted to their production systems. Many of them are using organic methods, and they're selling directly to consumers or directly to people like chefs. And so quality is a really important factor. And it's hard to sort through all of the varieties that might possibly be something you want to plant. And so we're hoping with the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative to help growers identify varieties that might be really good for Wisconsin without having to go through all of the catalogs themselves, do all of the trialing themselves. By participating in the network, hopefully they get kind of a curated set of varieties to test that have already been through some of our tests on the research stations that we work on.
I was looking at your site, and one of the interesting things for me was not only taste involved with the chefs, but even the formation of the vegetable itself. Some peppers, for example, are probably you can get less waste as a chef, depending on how it's structured.
Right. Yes, and that's one of the reasons why involving professionals like chefs in the project is important, because the flavor of a pepper can be excellent, but if it's very wrinkled or the top cap is kind of sunken in so that when you cut it, you have to go around the stem, it takes a lot more time, or you get more waste if you cut all of that off. And so that also, those kind of practical things are easier to do with a group of chefs than to try to predict all of that ourselves as researchers.
Absolutely. Nico, let's talk Seed Linked now. What, and probably should go back to the beginning. It's been a while since you've been on. What does Seed Linked do?
Yeah, great question. And you really tie perfectly what Julie mentioned about. But really, Seed Linked is in the idea of like, what if you could connect, I mean, all the stakeholders that Julie mentioned, like from chef, grower, but literally, hundreds of thousands of grower, chef, and breeder, and then expertise and information together to create common information to better characterize, breed, and choose variety. And so a big part of Seedlinked is really helping partners like Julie's have been part of Seedlinked since day one to help collect this information, but not only collect this information, but share back to everyone. And so a second pillar of Seedlinked is really connecting. Now we have more than 200,000 insights shared by many, many master gardener, farmer, chef together in the platform under a seed search and a marketplace where you can look for those traits, look for what is the most flavorful carrots, for example, in around Madison or tomato or pepper, and find all this insight, comments, and make decisions, informed decisions that can really help you. I know many of you probably have a stack of seed catalog in front of you. And yeah, how to augment, exactly. Yeah.
I happen to have the whole seed catalog, Jerry Gettle's seed catalog in front of me right now.
Yeah, so, and those seed catalog are amazing and make us dream, and they have beautiful picture and description, but imagine augmenting your search of what you're going to plant with local insight from grower around you. And the last piece of Seedlinked is really now, we just recently added, is creating a social media place where, in addition to contributing and sharing information or searching, you can also follow expert grower, join seed discussion, and exchange information directly into Seedlinked, connecting to all the space. And so really at the end, concretely, we will work with Julie, for example, crowdsourcing flavor with a network of chef on carrot, potato, or grain, and this information will be connected on the search, and you can find the most flavorful, and you can and ask questions as well. And so you have really three way as a master gardener or gardener or farmer to interact with Seedlinked is being part of collaborative trialing that, for example, Julie is running, but many other organizations around the nation are doing, finding seed and joining seed discussion.
And I saw on your site, somebody called it crowdsourcing at its most delicious.
I like that quote. Yeah, that's from, I love it. It's from an amazing farmer that part of Julie Dawson, Kat Becker up north, Wisconsin, who been participating in so many trials. And yeah, exactly. That's it.
Well, who's eligible to contribute seed information?
That's a great question. And so many organizations like Seed to Kitchen use Seedlinked and their network of grower, which will be farmer and master gardener. But really, it's really open. It's really a citizen science principle. So many, many gardeners can contribute and participate to this trial. And so if you have some expertise, and we oftentimes underestimate how much expertise we have, but
yeah,
I really engage you or encourage you to participate in some of this trial. Seed to Kitchen, maybe Julie, you can mention some of those projects. At Seedlinked, we have still a large trial as an example of on summer lettuce, and we already have like 80 growers all across the U.S. who sign up, and we're going to receive 3 random summer lettuce that they're going to receive in the mail for free, and they're going to be invited on their mobile app to characterize vigor, bolting, flavor, potential disease. It's very simple. It's on a 1 to 5 scale. They can share picture comments, and then they all funnel together. And then when you collaborate and participate, you also have access to all the results. So it's really not a one-way street where you share data and you don't see the result, but really the platform is following really the principle of citizen science, where it's really a two-way street where you participate and you receive information, and it's super fun.
And I was thinking about this the last time we talked. I don't recall the numbers, but I think there's been a lot of growth in this, in the numbers of people and the locations of where they're participating from.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, it's such an amazing need globally. Like, and especially with a lot of change in climate and condition and consumer need, we have more that we are now, as we speak, almost close to 8,000 growers who contributed inside the platform. And we are now scaling it in Europe, in most countries in Europe, in West Africa, in South America. And so really imagine, yeah, being this knowledge that is shared and connected, how powerful it can be for you as a grower, but also as so many independent breeder or people locally who are going to develop the next locally adapted carrot, the tomato. They can tap into this resource suddenly to make better crops, better advancements, and ultimately make your gardener more successful and happy and enjoying. Yeah.
Well, Julie, maybe Nico was kind of referring back to you. Maybe you can talk a bit more about the collaboration with Nico.
Sure. Yeah. We started working with Nico when Seedlinked was just getting up off the ground. And we have been partners on a few different projects to develop methods. So we're not business partners. UW has no financial stake in Seedlinked, yeah. But we've been working on methods development, essentially. And one of the things that Seedlinked has allowed us to do is expand participation. Before we started using the Seedlinked software, we essentially would do a trial on the research station and select a very limited number of varieties of, say, tomatoes to send out to growers. And farmers would sign up. We had a few gardeners, but we had to send all varieties to all farmers because essentially the logistics were too complicated to be able to customize it. And so growers had to be planting a lot of tomatoes in order to feel like they could participate. And with Seedlinked, we can manage more people because it's easier to actually manage the mailing and the communication. And we can also use the built-in statistical software to send each grower three varieties, but a different three. And then we can use the whole network to still compare all of the varieties in the trial. So instead of selecting, say, five or six and sending them to everybody, we could actually test 10 or 12 and everybody gets three, but we can still get good information on the relative performance of all 10 or 12 varieties. And so that has allowed us to essentially send out more diversity to actually get a better sense of how these varieties do and start working with independent breeders who may be testing something that's not necessarily quite finished, that's not released, and they want to get a broader geographic network testing it, which isn't something we could do very well before because we needed a lot of seed of each variety since it was going to every person, and they needed to be pretty finished in order to have had enough trialing to be worth sending out. And so this way we can really help independent breeders who don't often have access to that kind of data. Larger companies are able to maintain testing networks that sample, you know, places in southern Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin and, you know, other places in the country. An independent breeder or even a public sector breeder, we work with a lot of university breeders, they often have more limited trialing capacity. And so this citizen science allows those smaller entities to access higher quality data and to actually get varieties out there more effectively and get them known, because a lot of the struggle of introducing a new variety, even if it is really, really good, is that it's hard to get visibility. And so having a large network of trialers and having a lot of gardeners participate really helps get the word out about varieties that might be performing exceptionally well in Wisconsin.
And then this data is visible in Seedlinked. And so then you really promote the adoption of small locally adapted seed. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking back to your mission statement. And if you think about it with, and as you discuss, where you've got basically without this kind of a system, you have like the major seed people. And so you've got a more limited selection of seeds that go out. And this really broadens the scope of the seeds that are available.
Yeah, that's correct. And also you have to understand that those large seed companies, they're a private entity and driven by return on investment and revenue. And so most of their breeding and many of them is more than 80%, is really for like California or the main region of production. And so, for example, we did this national trial of tomato where Big Beef is from Seminis. It's like the major tomato. And we had variety from small seed company that did much better, but nobody knew. And those variety are bred for those small region where there's not a huge demand, but we still need in the upper Middle West, we still need to grow broccoli, we still need to grow tomato. And so...
Oh, man, it's quite an operation. Julie Dawson, one of our guests today, associate professor in the Department of Horticulture. She leads the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative. Nico Angelbear is co-founder and CEO of SeedLinked. He has expertise in data architecture, crop modeling, fundamental breeding techniques, and participatory breeding strategies. Questions or comments from them, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk and the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here visiting with Julie Dawson, who leads the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative in Wisconsin. Nico Angelbear is co-founder and CEO of SeedLinked. And as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in with your questions. We're talking about the work of the collaborative and about SeedLinked. You may have questions about the process, about the seeds themselves, or maybe you've got a vegetable gardening question. I'm pretty sure they could answer them. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. So, Julie, let's talk about trialing. Tell us more about the process.
Sure. So the goal is to take new varieties that are developed by either smaller scale companies or public sector breeders or companies focused on organic production and trial them in the upper Midwest. So a lot of the breeding may happen potentially outside of the upper Midwest. Some of it does, and we try to prioritize varieties that have been developed here, but we can also potentially benefit from breeding work that has been done in the Pacific Northwest or the Northeast, where climate conditions are similar. And so we want to take new varieties that are coming out from those breeding programs, trial them in the upper Midwest, and then test them with farmers and chefs to see if they have good potential for farmers and gardeners here. So what we would do is typically we get a lot of different varieties and we'll trial them on the research station, which in Madison, we have certified organic ground on our research station. And then we also work in Spooner, which is managed organically. That's up north in kind of the northwest part of Wisconsin. We would trial a lot of different varieties there and then make a selection of the ones that have the best potential to send out in trials for on-farm trials. We are relying more and more actually on-farm trials and less on the on-station trials as we see the quality of the data that we're getting from the participatory network. It's really showing a good correlation. And so we're pushing more out to the actual on-farm trials. And with that, I include garden trials too. Gardeners are participating at the same level. So what would happen is we would send out seed and then we give the gardeners and the farmers a framework for evaluation. So just to walk people very quickly through that process, in kind of January to March, and people can still sign up for trials until about Tuesday, people would indicate that they're interested in doing a trial for tomatoes or potatoes. There's a few different crops. They change from one year to the next which crops are available. And the main limitation is seed. And so everybody's welcome to participate. If we run out of seed, We obviously can't send you seed. So we then send the growers seed samples and all of the things they need for the trial, stakes, that kind of stuff to actually plant it, a map to put it out in their garden. And then they have a trialing data collection sheet on SeedLinked. So that could be on their smartphone or on the computer. And it will guide them through which traits to collect data on. So that might be early season vigor, it might be productivity, it might be disease resistance. And they rate that from 1 star to 5 stars for the 3 varieties that they have. And then that data is submitted. And as soon as you complete the trial, you can see the results from everybody else. And then we also, on the research station and in Madison, do flavor evaluation. So we'll ask gardeners and farmers to rate flavor, but we'll also do some rating of flavor ourselves and then work with the chefs that we have in our network to do that as well. So the other thing we're kind of adding, and we can come back to it if you want.
No, go ahead.
So we're adding the possibility to participate in actual breeding trials with varieties that are not yet commercially finished. And you would then get a set of lines that would be all genetically different from a breeding project. So we're working with Nature and Nurture Seeds in Michigan and KC Tomatoes in Kansas City, as well as the Organic Seed Alliance and public sector breeding programs. And people can do 2 different kinds of tomatoes or peppers. And if you're interested in that, you essentially do the same type of process, but you can also save seeds to continue the breeding process. And you work with a group of growers that are all working on the same breeding project.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating project because it not only you're trialing, but you're really shaping the seed of the future. Like, and for example, we have this pepper breeding where last year, for example, 40 of you of gardener and farmer receive a combination of 3 new line part of 25 that are going to be screened, and you all evaluated them, and then we selected 8 I think of the top, and now we are sending those back this year to even more, and I think this trial is still open, and then this is really the goal, is to find from all this like a sweet pepper, bell pepper that will be locally adapted to the upper Middle West in this region with amazing flavor, earliness, great disease resistance. And you together, collectively, we bring this variety to everyone.
Hmm. Dot in Manitowoc has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dot. Thanks for calling.
I hope I have this question. How do you evaluate the seeds when it is planted in clay soil or the Algoma type soil or the sandy soil? Do we have to have our soil tested first to see if it's going to be up to the potential of the seed?
Hmm. Nico, yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, that's it's a really great question. And you mentioned 2 opposite soil, from very potentially drying soil, sandy, to a clay, maybe more wet and potentially maybe more prone to disease and other. And at SeedLinked, we are not including soil. And this is definitely in the future where we will be able to filter by soil characteristics. But I would say definitely for more wet type environment, looking really at the disease. And Julie, maybe you may have other input on those 2 different type of soil.
Yeah,
so in general, if the question is about how do we account for different soil types, one thing we want to do is sample many different soil types, knowing that Wisconsin is highly diverse in its soil. It's important for breeders and seed companies to know if the variety does well across a range of soil types or only in certain types of soil. And we can map where your location is to a general sense of the overall soil type in that region. As Nico said, specific soil types are a later addition. We can do some with climate data, and so we certainly can filter by growing USDA hardiness zones. So the idea is to get more granular as it goes. That takes a lot of data, and so it'll take several years to build up to the point where we could make predictions about particular soil types or particular other climatic conditions. Right now, the most important thing is to know, does this variety do well across a wide range of these other parameters? You know, is it widely adapted to Wisconsin? Is it adapted beyond Wisconsin? Is it mostly northern Wisconsin, mostly southern Wisconsin? So that the breeders and the seed companies have that information when they're actually deciding, okay, are we going to put this in the seed catalog or not? And these are very small seed companies, so they're pretty focused on regional needs. And also, it's really important for farmers to be able to know, is this variety likely to do well for me, or are most of the reviews that are good coming from a region where I know they have different environmental conditions? Same thing with gardeners. And so we don't ask people to collect soil samples. We're really trying to get data from other sources to make it as easy as possible for participants. But we do ask you to put in some information about how the trial is managed. So there's no restrictions on how you manage it, but we do ask you, you know, if you used a cover crop or if there was any disease management or fertility management, so that we have a better sense of how people are managing it, so that we can better describe the results when we get them.
And we have a simple question asking, is your soil was poor, medium, or rich? And then you can also type comments. Yeah.
And the growers themselves, are they all organic growers?
No. There is a large number that are organic, but it is not a requirement. I think the main thing that ties the growers and gardeners together is an interest in direct market quality. So flavor and quality when selling directly to people or when eating it yourself, obviously. Most of the growers in the network use lower input or organic practices, and many are certified organic, but we certainly don't require that.
So, Nico, let's say that I'm sitting here in Wisconsin with a garden, just kind of a home gardener. But I'm a pretty decent gardener, and here on Garden Talk, I can tell you we have thousands of master gardeners, for example, listening in right now, and others who aren't master gardeners but who are pretty darn good gardeners, who are saying, "Well, is this something that I could get myself involved in?"
Yeah, of course, and really. Do not all sign right now because we're not going to have enough seed for those 2,000. But in the future, and that is really the vision and the dream, is like all of you to participate and share your knowledge to all your local community via, we're all connected, and why not using digitalization and tool to make this easier? And so please, yes, there's many different organizations from Extension and like program like Julie. We also have an amazing local organization called Seed Save Exchange in Decorah, who is a seed bank with thousands of heirloom, who use seedling to characterize the heirloom. And as we speak right now, they're shipping trial pack to more than 600 growers. And every year in January and February, you can sign up for those trial and you receive those seeds. So please, there's still a few trial open that you can join. And next year, if you don't sign up with, there's not enough seed, please sign up next year.
And go from there. And online, I see that it is possible, if I'm not mistaken, to purchase seeds from your site.
Yeah, and so with Julie, we are part of a large grant with USDA called the OREI grants to really try to boost the adoption of organic seed. And part of this grant is really was to develop, to connect all this information from that has been crowdsourced to make better decisions. But then the next step is where to find this variety. And so the next step is like, okay, who are distributing it? And so we connected 11 seed company, small and medium, with really strong ethics and mission. And so now you can on Seedlinked order across all those 11 amazing small seed company like Nature and Nurture and Seed Saver, and even Jung is part of it, and many other small. And so you can look at this data, compare different variety, make a selection, make wish list, and in one cart you can order across a seed company.
And we're not talking about just tomatoes here.
No, yeah, that's great. All vegetable.
I was looking at the list and I thought, well, that's pretty much everything I'd ever want to grow. Oh,
yeah, it's been amazing. You know, we had, I mean, Julie, you work on multiple crop, and we have people even working like in small grain. We have people in pretty much all vegetable. And so, like, I think we have data on 45 crop. And it, as of today, yeah, it's more than 200,000 insight from grower.
200,000. Oh, my goodness me. I'm wondering, are there some new varieties that you're testing, Julie, that you want to talk about?
So I can talk a little bit about the breeding projects, because those are really exciting.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
What?
There are a few of them. I was looking at them, and like the one from Burgerville Seedlings, for example, caught my eye just because I like the name.
Yeah, I think that's on Seedlinked. Yep. So with the Seed to Kitchen trials, we have three breeding projects that people can participate in. The signups are open until Tuesday or until we run out of seed. Mm-hmm. The first one is a cross between two saladette tomatoes. So they're kind of the ones that are a little bigger than a cherry and oblong, mm-hmm. rather than, they're not really a grape, they're a bit bigger than that. And there's a very popular variety called Juliet that is a hybrid. And the person at Nature and Nurture Seed, Erica Kempter, wanted to make a similar type of variety, but with better flavor and better resistance to field diseases in the upper Midwest, and made a cross with Blush that has very good flavor. It's an orange one that is the same size. And so that cross then has been selected by Erica and by growers in the Seed to Kitchen network to look at what type of variety do you want from this? And there are some red ones that look like Juliet. There are striped ones. There are some with really great flavor that are holding up well and are very productive. And so as we work with growers to select the best ones, one or more of those may end up as a variety. And we're working with the Open Source Seed Initiative to ensure that those varieties then are available for anybody to use and continue to develop and breed with. And so that one is in probably close to final years of testing. Yeah. It's not quite ready for commercialization, but if you sign up this year, you'll get some lines that are pretty close. And so that one's interesting. The other, go ahead.
Before we get to some other projects, Robin Ashland has a question for you. So I want to go there and see what's on Rob's mind. Rob, yep. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, Rob.
Can you hear?
Yes, hey. Go ahead.
Oh, my question was, as an individual, and if I wanted to cross, like, say, tomatoes and establish something that would be my own variety, what are the steps? You know, is there a certain number of years that I would have to just grow that one plant, or do I have to document it somewhere?
Yeah, that's a good question. Julie, go ahead.
Yeah, it would be a really fun project. So if you want to make a cross between two different tomato varieties, there are a number of guides online that you can find to show you either videos or publications. The Organic Seed Alliance is a really good source of information about how to actually make a cross. after you make the cross, you would harvest fruit from the flower that you pollinated and plant that. And that is the F1 generation. So if you see an F1 symbol in a catalog, that means it's actually that particular seed was from the first generation of a cross. But that, in this case, is just the first step. So you would grow that out. All of the progeny would likely be fairly uniform, and you could maybe see some differences. But in general, in that stage, you just save seed and you plant it again. And then that second generation will look very different. Each plant will be genetically distinct. And so you'll get a lot of variability in that second generation. You can make some selections there. We usually pick the best ones and eliminate ones that look not good. But we don't only pick one or two, because once you save seed from those and plant it again, you'll get the same thing. You'll get diversity again. So then you'll do the same process. You select the best. Don't narrow it too much. Don't only select one or two. Save seed, plant again. After five or six generations, you'll get the seed breeding true. So when you save seed from a single plant, it will look very similar the next year, unless you continue to do crosses. And there are some outcrosses in tomatoes, especially if you have a lot of pollinators. But in general, after 5 or 6 years, you would be seeing that the seed you save looks very similar to the plant that you selected. And at that point, it's more stable, and you can continue to save seed from that. You can also decide to keep multiple lines if there are multiple types that you really want to continue. Sometimes you get ones that are different colors. That's a fairly simple genetic trait. So you could get plants that look very similar, but they're just different color fruit. So it becomes a really fun project, but probably plan for 5 or 6 years to get from a cross to something that's stable. And more than that, if you want to have kind of a good sense of how it does from 1 year to the next with different weather conditions.
Yeah, and engage your neighbor gardener and send them seed and ask them feedback. This is truly how we work. And then do a big party and do tasting, like which one tastes the best. And that's pretty much what we do with Julie.
Yeah, right. Yes, definitely don't forget the fun parts.
Yeah, the fun parts, the testing parts are for sure. As you were thinking about that, we were just talking about the development of a beet here at UW, which you're probably both familiar with. Badger Flame, is it called?
Yeah, Irwin Goldman.
Yeah, Irwin was on.
He's developed several.
Irwin was on the show and we talked about it. What a lovely looking beet. Apparently it tastes pretty darn good as well. But
yes.
It was the same process, basically.
Yes.
You know, you can't do it overnight. You have to, there's some, as you say, there are several years, there may be several years of growing and sort of winnowing down to what you finally like the best.
Yeah, it's a really long process, and it really can take up to 10 years, like 8 to 10 years. So, but it's also a very, very fun and addictive activity, because it's really become your own baby in a way, you know, and then you want to see where it's going to go and how they're going to perform, how it's going to have the flavor. But more as a professional, as you imagine, if this is your living, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And so really, one of the core goals working together with Julie and Seedlink is how to lower this barrier of cost by bringing you as a gardener together to help those micro entrepreneurs bring local seed to your own community. And this is really, we strongly believe this is where we need to move forward in the future to have more of those. And so, yeah.
Nicola Angelbear, one of our guests today, co-founder of and CEO of Seedlinked. Our other guest, Julie Dawson, associate professor of horticulture at UW-Madison. She leads the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative. Questions for them, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address ideas at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking seeds and seed varieties and selecting the right ones and how you might get involved in maybe the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative or certainly with Seed Linked with our two guests, Julie Dawson and Nicola Angelbear. It's great to have both of them with us. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or email to ideas at WPR.org. Sharon in Appleton sent us an email. Last summer, she grew black crim tomatoes and saved some of the seeds, but she wasn't careful to protect the black crim flowers from the pollen of other tomato plants that were growing nearby, and wonders what are the chances that the black crim were cross-pollinated by other tomato plants. The other tomato plants included hybrids and heirlooms.
Yeah, that's a great question. In general, tomatoes self-pollinate, and so it is likely that most of the seed is actually black crim. There may be some outcrossing, which is when pollen from another plant lands on a flower and you get a seed that's a hybrid, essentially. Those should be fairly easy to see if she plants out the seed, and so you can get rid of those if you don't want them. Compared to black crim, it's likely that they will look quite a bit different when the plant actually starts producing fruit. If you have pollinators around and a lot of bee activity, the outcrossing rate can be a bit higher. But in general, most of her seed should still be black crim.
There you go, Sharon. Thanks so much for calling. Nico, how the heck did you get involved? You know, I mean, you're a guy with a lot of different talents here that seem to blend in pretty well.
Yeah, I grew up in France in countryside, similar region as the Dufflens, but the French version, really fascinated by farming and growing, and then end up in the US doing my PhD in plant breeding. And then I started to be a breeder, and I was really, and for about 10 years, worked for a large seed company, and I was all the time fascinated by how much grower, and when I say grower, gardener and farmer, knew about variety and how much knowledge they had. And oftentimes as a breeder, I was realizing like those gardener farmer knew better the varieties that I bred. And I was like, we are in such a connecting world. Like why can't I get information from them to help me as a breeder? But also me as a breeder, I was generating so much information. Why is this information doesn't help grower more and funnel back to help? And then in the meantime, I connect the different groups that Julie worked with, and Julie was in France as a postdoc, I believe, and this is how we connected. And I was fascinated by this emerging seed movement that is more decentralized, local, and participative. And I was starting to get engaged and really wanted to work with all those local group. And it was really hard to find a job. And so after a while, I was like, okay. I've learned a lot through my 10 years in big company and in data and in different technique. Why can't I leverage this knowledge and create my own project? And thanks to Julie, we applied for grants and we were successful, and voila, it started.
You see, so, you know your way around the garden and around the computer.
Yeah, I try.
Julie, what about you? How'd you get land in horticulture?
So I was kind of the weird kid that decided I wanted to be a farmer when I was 8 without having grown up on a farm. And I got interested in genetics in high school. I really liked science and math, and plant breeding was a great combination of agriculture and the science side of things. I also was very interested in doing something to help the environment. And agriculture has one of the largest impacts on the environment. And so organic agriculture was interesting. I started working for plant breeding programs when I was in high school and college, and then did a PhD in wheat breeding out at Washington State University, and a postdoc, as Nico said, in France, working with a participatory network of growers that were interested in developing wheat varieties that had good quality for artisan bread making and did well in organic systems. And then I came back to the States, worked in wheat at Cornell for another couple of years in organic breeding, and then got a position at UW in horticulture and worked same kind of goals into vegetable crops. So I've been learning a lot about vegetables over the past 10 years that I've been at UW, and still have a little bit going on grains and other crops as well.
Not so much wheat. We don't grow a lot of wheat in Wisconsin anymore.
We grow some. And we actually just this past Monday, Tuesday, had a bake test of some of our breeding lines of organic winter wheat with a group of 10 bakers in Madison that are helping us evaluate them. And we're hoping to release one so that farmers could start growing it in a couple of years.
All right. So there still some progress in the wheat area.
Yes. That's with Lucia Gutierrez, who's the cereals breeder at UW.
Oh, man. Nico, what are your contributors saying about SeedLink?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of excitement. To be honest, it's been a wild journey. And I'm a plant breeder. I'm used to be more outside, and diving into software has been probably the wildest journey. And to be honest, early on, about 80% of user of SeedLink hated SeedLink. every day receiving like email of this is not working, this bugs, this is terrible, I don't want to use this anymore. And 4 years later, I think we flipped the trend. I think 82-85% love it. And now that we start seeing more insight and more information, and the excitement is growing. And really, SeedLink is a collaborative effort. I'm just here as a catalyst, but it's really a collaborative effort of thousands of grower, breeder, organization who work together to make this tool better and better every day.
What are your reactions, or what are the reactions from your point of view, Julie, for those participating?
Yeah, I would say very similar to what Nico was hearing. At the beginning, there was interest in going back to paper. The problem with paper is that it takes us a really long time to summarize everything and get information back out to growers before they buy seed. And so it is maybe more convenient for some people to have a paper data sheet, but it then takes a long time for us to actually return data, and we become the bottleneck. And so as the software has become easier to use and the data presentation has become a lot more user-friendly, there is a lot of excitement about getting results very quickly. And from my perspective, the actual methods we can use have expanded greatly because of the flexibility built into the software. So we're able to do things like send out fewer varieties, but still test a large number. We're able to work collaboratively with independent breeders. And it's expanded what we can do in our group beyond what we could do if we were having to manage everything by hand with paper data sheets or other kind of analog methods.
Yeah, as an example, Seed Saver Exchange had, I think, 20 or 30 gardener participating before SeedLink. The first year or two, most of them hated their SeedLink journey, but now they are almost 700 as of today. And so you kind of see the evolution of it.
So maybe you got some of those early adopters who weren't too happy. They've come back and are happy.
I hope so. Actually, I should dive into that. And a big part of building a software is user interview and getting feedback. And so more and more, we all the time been talking a lot with the user. And so I should go back to those fruit strategies.
go back and find out and see if they're liking things a whole lot better.
Yeah, I think they are. Like certainly there are people that don't enjoy using a smartphone, but there are a lot of farmers that do everything on their smartphone. And so as people have gotten used to doing a lot, it's much easier to have the data on the smartphone too.
Matter of fact, we're going to be doing a show on Monday's show. We'll be talking about technology and farming and agriculture. And some people, I think, who aren't involved in it will be quite amazed at what's going on the farm these days with technology. Julie Dawson, associate professor in the Department of Horticulture. She leads the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative. And Nicola Angelbear, co-founder and CEO of Seedlinks, our guest on the Ideas Network and on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We've been talking about seeds, vegetable seeds, with our guest today, Julie Dawson, associate professor at the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture. She leads the Seed to Kitchen Collaborative in Wisconsin. With her, Nicola Angelbear, who is the CEO and co-founder of Seedlinked. So what would you like to know about the collaborative or maybe about Seedlinked? Questions about seeds themselves, maybe you have a favorite variety you want to tell us about? Number to call is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Rob emailed us. He says he called about breeding his own tomatoes. What he's looking for is how to document his own seed variety so he could establish it as, let's say, Rob's tomato. Rob wants to grow his own tomato, and he wants a Rob's tomato maybe to that he could either maybe sell, or maybe just say I've got my own tomato. Julie, what do you think?
Yeah, so there are a couple of different ways to do something like that. Keeping good records and a good description is really important. So as you go through the process, each year take notes on why you selected something so that you have kind of the breeding history. And maybe you make one cross and then make selections each year, but each year you document how you made those selections. That could be just notes. If you want to sell seed, then you want to make sure that that description is in a catalog or on the package. Probably going into formal intellectual property rights is not something that an average individual breeder would want to do, but there are a few different formal methods of intellectual property rights. If you are interested in the Open Source Seed Initiative, that is easier to access as an individual. That comes with the expectation that anybody can use the seed that you've developed, but nobody can take out other IP, intellectual property, on progeny. All of the descendants of a variety, or if they use your variety to make a cross, all of those descendants would also be in the Open Source Seed Initiative. So that requires an application with some documentation of how you develop the variety, what the characteristics are, and then it gets reviewed and posted on a repository, which is online. That is very accessible. The other methods are not free, but would give you stronger protection for preventing other people from selling your variety, for example. If you also just want to document it so that it's clear that you developed it, you can do that by publishing something about it with a description, a picture, And there are some guides online. The Organic Seed Alliance, again, is a good source of information. I keep mentioning them because they've done really good outreach for small-scale plant breeders, and they often have very good sources of how-to guides. So if you're interested in that, I would recommend going to some of those sites.
Yeah, and you can also, on Seedlink, you can create an account for a trial manager or a breeder, and you can create a variety, start inviting people that you know or via social media or however, and then you can start characterizing and getting information, which then will allow you to maybe go to Jung or a dealer maybe and say, hey, I have this really well adapted variety and would you be interested in selling it?
Yeah, I guess I would. My issue would be, all right, I'm going to cross two varieties, but why? How do I know somebody hasn't already done that?
A lot of people can cross the same varieties and end up with something different at the end. So you would need to make sure that the variety you're starting with that you want to use as a parent allows for you to make a cross. That is possible with pretty much everything except varieties that have a utility patent on them, which some vegetable crops use utility patents heavily, but not as many as in, say, corn or soybeans.
Yeah.
And if the two parents are available to make a cross, the variety that you create will be different than the variety that someone else created. And so you don't need to worry about making the same cross as someone else.
Got it. Becky in Rio has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Becky.
Hi, thanks, Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
So I want to know about dwarf tomatoes. I've just heard of this concept fairly recently, and as I understand it, they are not determinate tomatoes. They're indeterminate tomatoes that have been bred to be a much smaller and compact plant, but they have the good taste and the good, great production of an indeterminate. What do you know about dwarf tomatoes?
Well, who wants to take that? Nico,
I'm just
going to
start
try?
Quickly. And Julie, you're the tomato expert. But I think we collaborated with Craig Lehoulier for a while with Seedlink, and he's one of the expert and breeder has many projects on dwarf tomato. I believe he was on the show with you, Larry, last year, and Bjorn. And Julie, do you have experience breeding or growing dwarf tomato?
We've had a few of the dwarf tomatoes in our trials. We don't have any in the breeding project, but the dwarf tomato project is a collaborative breeding project as well. And so they have a website with a lot of information about their particular varieties, as well as how to get involved. They've bred a lot of different really interesting types that are dwarf, so they do well in small containers or in small spaces, and they do have good flavor, or at least the ones that we've tried do.
And what was the name? Where should she look again?
It's called the Dwarf Tomato Project.
Dwarf Tomato Project. Okay. There you go, Becky. Thank you for calling. Chris in Black Creek, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show. Okay, so I bought the seeds. I won't mention the company. Some purple peppers. And when I germinated them in a dark drawer, all my other seeds for my garden germinated quite fine, but the purple peppers, they took forever to germinate so that, you know, I could grow them. And then when I put them under my growing lights to make the starters, they still took forever. Everything else jumped, but they wouldn't. And then in the fall, I really didn't get hardly any purple peppers off the plants. And I'm wondering if the seeds were like a second generation or something like that. And before you answer the question, I got to tell you guys, when I was a kid, we were pulling the sod after a rototiller. And I didn't know that you could grow silver. A 1905 silver dime popped out of the sod. And So would it grow? That's my question.
Chris, thanks for calling. Well, I don't know about growing silver dimes, but what about those peppers, those purple peppers that germinate so darn slowly compared to everything else?
Yeah, peppers are tricky, so you can't really necessarily diagnose the problem without seeing the seed. But in general, pepper seeds need higher temperatures to germinate uniformly. And so a grow mat is often a really good strategy, or a germ chamber that will stay 85 degrees with good humidity that you would put it in until they pop and then bring the seed back out. They tend to like warmer temperatures than other crops. That tends to be more pronounced for hot peppers than for sweet peppers. So I don't know whether the purple peppers were in the hot category or the sweet category. They also can be slower, especially if varieties are initially bred in warmer climates. You want to try to find something that says that it is adapted to northern climates or short season, and those typically mature more quickly. The Corno de Toro types, which are the thin-walled, sweet but long bullshorn pepper, tend to be somewhat earlier and change color faster from green to whatever color the final color is.
Yeah.
And so those peppers may be easier for people to grow than a full season bell, which often we have trouble getting it fully red or fully yellow.
Yeah, good points. Dennis, go ahead. Nico.
No, sorry. Date to maturity is really essential. And as Julie mentioned, there's variety like Carmen, Corno di Toro, who are lower than 80 day. And also like King of the North, kind of bell, some are of much shorter, well-adapted, will definitely bring fruits earlier. And
yeah. Good points. Dennis and Delavan, will give you a chance. Hi, Dennis.
Just quickly, I've been in and out of your conversations. I've been listening in the car, had to stop and get out, but you're still on, so I might as well ask a question. I wanted to find out what or whom I need to contact to see about participating in the trial that Julie Dawson was talking about, as well as are there any recommendations, internet links or someplace where I can go for general guidelines on doing a specific study? I've got some heirloom seeds that go back, I believe, as far as my great-grandmother, tomato seeds, and I just like to pick up as much as I could and document as much as I could without, you know, pouring or buying a bunch of gardening books or tomato books.
Okay. Julie, go ahead.
Great. Yeah, so to sign up for trials, you can go to seedtokitchenaltogether.horticulture.wisc.edu. And there is a link that says for gardeners, and that gets you to the page to sign up. So that's seedtokitchen.horticulture.wisc.edu. You can also email seedtokitchen@hort.wisc.edu. In terms of resources, the Organic Seed Alliance is a really good source of resources on seed saving and plant breeding. And we also have a trialing guide that we worked on with them that is on their website on how to run a trial on your farm. You're also welcome to reach out to me, and we have a number of trainings and other trial kind of educational events that where we would be happy to include you in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think for heirloom, you can also contact Seed Saver Exchange. They really love collecting old heirloom, and they will really help you also characterize them and asking more information. They may even bring them in their seed bank and maybe through the ADAPT program and giving a lot of more information on those. And for trial, also with seedlinked.com, you go on the webpage, on the front page, and you have a little tab, join a trial, just click on it and scroll down. You will see there's like a summer green lettuce trial. You can just click on it, enter your email, and you will be automatically and receive an invitation via Seedlinked to download the app and create an account. As soon as you accepted the trial and you put your mailing address, we will ship you seed within the next 4 to 6 weeks.
There you go, Dennis. And we'll put those links up, Clara, we'll put those links up on the Larry Mueller Show page. So ideas at WPR.org/Larry. Go to today's date, and Clara will have all the links that were just mentioned up on our site. Dennis, thank you. Diane in Madison, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I purchased some seeds for a cinnamon tree after I slowly killed off my daughter's cinnamon tree. They came from, I don't know where, I think Thailand. How do I know if they're actually good? I've been trying to germinate them one at a time. I've experimented. I've sent one home with a different daughter whose apartment is really warm. The current one I have on our radiant floor heat floor with plastic wrap over, so I'm sure that it is still moist. How long do I wait between trials, and any tips?
Wow, that's probably one you haven't had much experience with, Julie.
Yeah, no, they don't grow outside very well in Wisconsin. I think the best strategy would be to go to a, like, either the National Plant Germplasm System, or if it came from an international source, you could look to see if there's guidance on germination. Many species have some kind of dormancy that requires specific methods to get them to germinate. So I do not know if cinnamon tree requires that. I have had seed where you need to scarify it, which is, you know, abrade the seed coat so it can absorb water. You may need to cold treat it, although that's less likely if it's a tropical plant than if it's a plant that needs a winter. So there are certain methods that some species require in order to germinate. And I would look for kind of reputable sources online for tropical plants in order to see if that's the case.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Diane, good luck. Thank you for calling. Jim in Denmark, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Oh, thank you, Larry. Good morning. Say, I have I raise Connecticut pumpkins, and I found out that my sheep love to eat them, especially when they're out in the pasture in October and November. And so I want to raise them. Could your guest advise me how to store the seeds and so that they germinate? And then my second question is, we got a pack of free seeds from Jung last year. They were Armenian cucumbers, and I'm wondering if your guests, obviously they were hybrids and they were delicious with very few seeds and sweet fruit. Did your guests raise those?
All right. A couple of questions there. Julie, start with you.
Sure. So for seed storage, the key is making sure that the seeds are dried to a moisture level that's not too high and stored in a cool temperature or cool location. The rule of thumb is that the temperature in Fahrenheit plus the relative humidity should be under 100. Pumpkin seeds will last less long. They're larger seeds, and so they won't store as long as something like a tomato seed, but they're generally okay for a few years. You want to make sure that you harvest them, that you dry them, and then you store them in a cool, dry place.
Yeah.
If the Connecticut pumpkin is a heirloom, then you should be able to harvest seed from it. If you are planting other pumpkins of the same species, so it's probably a Pipo class. I'm not as familiar with that variety, but you wouldn't want to grow it near other people. So that would be things like acorn squash, pumpkins. That will outcross. So those definitely will cross, and you will get something that is not either variety that you had growing. So you need to isolate it. And it also, since it's an outcrosser, you need to make sure to maintain enough plants that you don't get what's called inbreeding depression, where you end up with plants that are not performing very well. And so Seed Savers Exchange and Organic Seed Alliance both have guides on isolation distances and numbers of plants in order to save outcrossing species. So I'd recommend going there for that. And then the question on Armenian cucumbers, we've grown a number of different kinds of cucumbers. I don't know if we've grown that particular variety. I think that there's a lot of challenges to growing cucumbers in the field in Wisconsin. So if you found one that grows well and tastes good, then definitely stick with it.
There you go. You're not going to be able to plant those seeds and get true seeds, though.
That is true. Yes. If it's a hybrid, you will need to purchase seeds again. Otherwise, you'll get something that's very different.
Yeah, what a great cucumber. Julie, you've done a lot of trial in cucumber, like Shintokiwa or Tasty Green, more Asian type, been doing really well around here.
Yeah, really well. Jim, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Boy, plans for SeedLink, if you just keep expanding, Nico?
Yeah, the plan is really to have more and more grower engage, and really we are working more and more on the seed discussion aspect, where people really can join as a social media and have seed discussions, see expert grower, follow organization like Julie, and so have more of this interconnected space within SeedLink. And yeah, we're just launching in Europe with so many amazing small partner, and that's very exciting, especially coming from France. It's nice to be able to also work at home.
there you go. And Julie, how about you?
Yeah, we are enjoying working with SeedLink a lot. It's simplified our logistics quite a bit. We are interested in expanding a lot of the on-farm work and using that more than the research station trials, as well as bringing more farmers into the actual selection process and working with independent breeders. And so we're really excited to see some of these breeding projects where farmers and gardeners can participate in shaping the varieties that will be available to them in the future.
Pleasure talking with both of you today. Thanks so much. We'll probably get an update down the road here, but for the time being, thanks, Julie, and thanks, Nico. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Julie Dawson, Associate Professor in Horticulture at UW-Madison. Nicola Angelbear is co-founder and CEO of SeedLink. Great to have them with us. As I mentioned earlier, on Monday, we'll take a look at technology on the farm these days. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.